Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we are still trying to comprehend the magnitude of the destruction caused by Monday's derecho storm. So many people are still dealing with a lack of power, damage to homes and businesses, lack of food and water at this point. And we're also dealing with an incredible number of downed and damaged trees. We've asked Mark Vitosh, forester with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, to start us off today. And he and ISU Extension horticulture specialist Richard Giron will answer your questions as the hour goes on. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Charity.
And I know you've been out in Linn County and you've been out in Johnson County, so the eastern part of the state. We know that there are trees down across the state, but tell me what you're seeing.
Well, I'll tell you, it's pretty bad everywhere. I actually was around when a derecho hit in the Venton area 9 years ago.
Right, yeah.
In 2011, and that was really bad. In our woodlands and in Venton, it caused a lot of destruction. But it was, I think, a narrower band. I think this band is wider and longer. That was very significant. I'm still working with people 9 years later in the Venton area in their woodlands, still dealing with damage from that storm. So this one was pretty significant. I will tell you, living in the Iowa City area, damage is pretty significant. But I went up to the Cedar Rapids area on Wednesday and just went through the southern part of town. And all I can tell you is in Iowa City, I see a lot of leaves. And what I mean by that is there's still green trees. In Cedar Rapids, there's green trees, but I'm seeing a lot of white. And what I mean by that is I'm seeing a lot of wood. All I see is wood stubs when I go through parts of Cedar Rapids and parts of Linn County woods and areas like that. And I'm not seeing that. I mean, I don't have power at my house in Iowa City still. And, you know, people all over, you know, it's significant. So I don't, you know, saying it's worse one place than another. I mean, it's bad everywhere. But I do know in the Cedar Rapids area, when I look at it, I'm just not seeing a lot of green leaves left. And that worries me because it just means there's just structure left. But also in my short part of Cedar Rapids, I saw a lot of trees on cars, on houses, power lines, you know, going down the streets, you were kind of weaving in and out, and that was Wednesday still. So at least in Iowa City, places like that, you can go down most streets. There are piles, but Cedar Rapids hit pretty significant. Yeah. But I've talked to other folks over west, Boone, Ames, places like that. I think throughout the region, everyone is been hit pretty hard. And there are patches where it's not as bad. Smaller communities, I've been to some small communities where there's just, you see a few downed trees, a few piles of branches, that's great. But in some places, it's very, very significant.
In the past, Mark, we've talked about how a city or a town is actually also a forest ecosystem because we have so many trees that we've planted in our communities.
Right.
And it sounds like what you're seeing in Cedar Rapids is really a deforestation.
Yeah, I actually talked to the city forester, and one thing that's actually going to help us, I talked to their city arborist, Todd Fagan, talked to him on Wednesday, was lucky to get through to him and spend a few minutes on the phone, and they just recently, within the last 2 years, had a street tree inventory there, and they roughly had 40,000 street trees. They had 7,000 ash trees, though, that they knew that they're going to lose to the emerald ash borer eventually, But he just did a quick estimate for me, and he thinks they're going to lose close to 13,000 street trees just from the storm. And that would take them down to 20,000 trees, street trees. And again, we were not going to hold him to these numbers, but he then and that doesn't include the parks. But he said if you throw in the parks and then just private properties, he was throwing numbers between 40 and 50,000 trees.
Wow.
So it's going to be very significant. I haven't been able to talk to Iowa City to get any ideas of estimates, you know, as a possible tree loss. But you're right. It is going to be significant. Now, the one thing, they have a great replanting program there, and they were already doing it, you know, because of Emerald Ash Borer. They've planted hundreds and I know maybe even thousands of trees, even in the last 4 or 5 years in preparation for the loss to the ash. But we don't know even at this point what damage those trees sustained. I mean, what I've seen so far, most small trees in that, you know, 10 foot and less seem to do pretty good. You might see a snap branch here or there, but, you know, most of the smaller trees seem to have withstood it pretty good. So we'll just have to wait and see. But yes, it'll be significant.
So that's the big picture. And we can talk more as the year goes on and the years go on about the impact of that big picture. Of course, a lot of us are looking at our yards and, you know, we may have multiple trees down. We may have lost branches. We're assessing that damage. So walk us through that process. I also want to mention that on Twitter, I have shared some of the resources that you've shared with me about assessing storm damage and action you can take. So these things that we're talking about, you can also find them in written form. If you go to Twitter, we'll put them in our web post that will go up later this afternoon. Where do you start, Mark?
Well, I mean, obviously most people, I mean, the first thing everyone has to do is even before they start cleanup, they got to make sure that they can be around places, that it's even safe to enter to start trying to clean up the stuff on the ground and stuff. You got to make sure there's not stuff above your head. And I will give you a personal story. My wife was trying to help me on Monday, and I had a hanging branch, and I raised my voice significantly and said, get out of here. This is not a safe area. And that branch did not fall on her, but the next day, it was probably a 400 to 500 pound branch, fell by itself right where she was standing. She was trying to be helpful, but, you know, I was on the edges and trying to evaluate things. So you got to make sure before you even start it, make sure you should even be in there to kind of even start looking at things. But then, you know, you can start cleaning up the stuff on the ground and start, you know, trying to create piles. But the thing I'll tell folks, too, is chainsaws are very dangerous. And people should have the right equipment on, should have gloves, should have hard hats, should have what we call chaps on our legs, even if we're cutting up branches. I mean, I'm seeing people out with chainsaws on ladders, on, you know, in shorts, no ear protection, no eye protection. You know, we need, I know we want to clean things up and I know we want to do things, but we also need to think about our personal safety. And it's been hot. People are working, you know, kind of pushing themselves hard, and that's when people get hurt, when they're tired. So I would tell folks, for the big stuff, if they have trees that are damaged, you know, it's going to be a long wait, but they need to wait for the professionals. But in the yard stuff, you know, if we can do cleanup to kind of get that taken care of so we can get in there and evaluate the tree and look at issues, then that's okay. But we still need to be safe even in those cases, and take care of ourselves. But so we all want to save our trees, but I would tell folks, if we're starting to get below 50% of the tree crown, not that's gone, Then we really start to need to evaluate if that tree will even survive. When you start getting only having maybe 20 or 30% of the crown left of a tree that was damaged, that's getting really low for that tree to really thrive and survive. But the other thing we really need to look at is, and my wife actually said this, which was great. She said, you know, Mark, these folks are going to be looking at their trees and trying to save them, but they need to think about there could be damage to those trees that maybe that tree's not safe anymore because of the wind, and it's not necessarily the crown, but we need to look at the trunk. We need to look and see if roots are snapped. We need to see if there's new cracks that weren't there before. So we need to evaluate that tree to really make sure that it's even a tree that needs to stay in the landscape, Charity.
Now, you are recommending that we get professional help with a lot of our trees. Of course, the waiting list is going to be very, very long with a lot of arborists.
Right.
So first and foremost, do we have time to wait?
Well, I think if folks have situations, like I had someone show me some pictures yesterday that had a very large cottonwood with a crack in the middle and it was leaning towards a structure. They need to call the services. What I'm finding from the tree services is they're trying to get the urgent ones as quickly as they can. If people have trees on their houses, vehicles, or if there's a tree that actually is a threat to the surroundings, they're trying to get to those as quickly as they can. They're bumping those up. A tree service I talked to the other day said, Mark, yard cleanup and pruning is months away, but we're trying to, you know, put out the fires, and if there's stuff that's urgent. So if someone has a severe crack or split, when they call those tree services, they just need to tell them that, hey, you know, this tree has an appearance that it could fail. It's leaning over the house. We shouldn't all tell people that, you know, everyone shouldn't tell them that so they come to their house.
Right.
But, I mean, if it's more just, hey, yeah, our tree has problems. We're not seeing major cracks. It may need some pruning. That can wait, you know.
Right.
But if you have something that's urgent that's going to potentially harm someone or a structure, hopefully we can get someone there to see if it needs to be removed.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. DNR Forester Mark Vitosh with us today. This is Horticulture Day from Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Today, we've been talking trees with DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. Of course, we've seen incredible tree damage in the state of Iowa this week as a result of Monday's storm. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us now, Richard Giroux, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And Mark's been telling us about everything he's seen in eastern Iowa. Ames also got badly hit this week. What are you seeing in Ames?
Significant damage. There are some trees that are perfectly fine, but a certain percentage were badly damaged. In my neighborhood, the homes were built in the 1950s. And we have a lot of silver maples. Do not plant silver maples. They are just shredded. They're weak-wooded. We have a grand sycamore at Lincoln Way and University Boulevard in town. Everybody knows it.
Yes.
That sycamore is perfectly fine. It does great.
That's so good to hear. In fact, I got an email asking specifically about that tree, Richard. So you made a lot of Iowa State grads happy telling us about that.
It looks grand. I mean, it just looks untouched. But I think the damage in this area is worse in the Huxley area, which is about 15 miles south of Ames. And like Mark said, you see white, you don't see green.
Wow.
Significant damage.
Yeah, well, and that just underlines, Mark, what we were talking about earlier. You know, when Richard was talking about losing a lot of trees that were about 70 years old, because presumably they were planted around the same time that those houses were built, this is going to affect communities and how they look for generations, right?
Yeah, I mean, and every neighborhood's going to be different. Like Richard said, you know, some places really significant, and other places, you know, trees in the general area look okay. But yeah, it's gonna. We know trees. You know, they always say the best time, you know, to plant a tree was 20 years ago. So, you know, and the next best time is going to be next spring. Mm-hmm. You know, that's going to be the next best,
and the spring after that.
Yeah. And we got to remember is we don't need to be in a rush. This is very devastating. It takes us a while to kind of, you know, bring it all in and stuff. But we don't, we need to worry about cleanup and what trees we're going to keep and stuff like that. But we've got winter and times and maybe over the next couple years to evaluate. This also, you know, is a great opportunity to bring up that word we always bring up, and it's diversity. As Richard said, we know in general, we've done some studies throughout Iowa, we know in our street tree populations, and usually what's in the neighborhoods mimic what's in the street trees, we had 30 to 34% maple in a lot of our communities across Iowa. We had 17% ash. So if my calculations are correct, that's over 50% in just ash and maple. So this will be an opportunity for us to plant more diversity as we look forward and to try to alleviate potential future insect problems, disease problems. And one of the publications, it does list some species that are a little more tolerant to storm and wind and ice. But I will tell you over here, I've kind of changed my tune. In places where it was bad, it didn't matter what species it was. I mean, a lot of the monster oaks, a lot of the good sycamores, a lot of trees sustained damage, especially if they had defects. But it wasn't, I saw a lot of maple, but over here I'm seeing almost every species in neighborhoods sustain some damage. So no tree's perfect, but I will agree with Richard, especially the silver maples. I haven't seen a lot of standing silver maples left. I'm sure there's some, and there are, but this is an opportunity to promote diversity going forward.
And we need to get to some questions from listeners, but can you give us a short list, Mark, of trees we should consider planting as we think about diversity in our landscapes, because we don't want to all plant the same thing?
Well, I would defer to the publication that Dr. Iles put together, Managing Storm Damaged Trees, and he has some good lists in there where he lists some species that are more susceptible, kind of intermediate, and then some that are more tolerant to storm activity and stuff. And again, it all comes to Charity, you know, I've said this 100 times, so I'll say it 101 times. Every situation where they're going to plant trees, it really depends on their site, what's going to work best. The DNR, we also have a publication called Rethinking Maple that talks about the great opportunities or other species people consider. But let's put it this way, to answer your question, there's a good diverse out there, but I don't want to list four or five because then we're going to stick to that.
All right, but think about it.
Think
about it.
Jeff Iles card.
Right. Think about it when you plant.
Yes.
And we need to get to questions. Here's one that leads into one of the topics that I wanted to make sure we touched on this hour. This is from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. She says, a while back, I asked about how to get an arborist to assess a tree on my property. As instructed, I went to treesaregood.com. iowa.com and contacted the city arborist, but he never got back to me. I then contacted the next nearest arborist in Marion, and he told me he isn't able to do any assessment for me because I'm in Cedar Rapids. The same tree dropped limbs on our garage, but is still mostly intact. However, I'd really like to get someone to assess it because I'm sure there's damage and new weakness from this storm, and it's still a very large tree. How do I find an arborist?
That is challenging, and that Trees Are Good site, I think, is through the International Society of Arboriculture, which is also called the ISA, and they do have a list of find an arborist, and that's for certified arborists. If someone's not certified, that doesn't mean they can't do the job. It's just the ISA has a program that people are tested. They have to do continuing education over a three-year period. The challenge that you run into, there's a lot of certified arborists out there that are not for hire. Like if you went through, you'd actually find my name. I'm a certified arborist, but I'm not for hire. She is right. On that list for Cedar Rapids, though, I do know that there are a few certified arborists that are for hire. And a lot of times they have to just work through that because I don't know if they always have those separated. But you can put in your address, you can put in your town. The challenge is going to be for smaller communities and people, you know, further out from some of these communities. It's going to be harder. I would still work with local tree services, too. There's some great tree services that there's people that have worked with trees all their life. And, yes, they're good at pruning and good at removal, and they may not be, some of them may tell you, hey, I don't evaluate trees as much, but there are some good people out there. So they need to just kind of talk to their neighbors, talk to others too, and you know, go that route. But work off that list and continue to go down the list to see if they can find somebody that that can help them.
All right. And hey, kids, this sounds like a great career opportunity in the making. It sounds like we need a lot more arborists.
You get in some communities like Des Moines, I could tell you there's a lot more listed. Between Cedar Rapids and Iowa City, there are some. But even in those areas, there aren't large numbers. There are limited. So it is gonna take time.
All right. And before we get to the phones, I also want to ask you specifically about oak trees, because on this program, we talk all the time about how we do not prune oak trees outside of the winter months. And of course, nature pruned a whole lot of oak trees on Monday. So if you have an oak that has lost branches but isn't completely destroyed, what do you do?
That's a great question. And what I would tell folks is if we're always concerned about oak wilt. And the one thing I will tell you, if you read, there's a good Iowa State publication on oak wilt. And as you get further in the summer, the probability of transfer of that fungus becomes less and less. You get people like me that are very conservative that tell you not to prune your oak trees until November just to be super careful, and that's good. But if something was going to happen, it usually happens within about the first 48 hours. It happens very quickly because those wounds tend to dry out fairly quickly. But if the beetle that carries that fungus is attracted, they usually come within the first couple days. So if they haven't done anything yet, I would actually advise most people that have oaks to actually wait till November to do any major pruning. If they are having somebody work on their tree because they have them treat those wounds with latex paint. But if they can wait, if it's not a severe or a situation where there's safety involved and stuff like that, but I wouldn't be calling people saying that, hey, you got to come prune my tree and then treat it. I would say if they don't have to prune it right now, I'd actually wait until we get some frost. And then at that point, we wouldn't need wound dressings. My concern is now if it probably is already there. But again, what I can tell from the research and stuff, as we get further in the summer, our probabilities are a lot less. So we can all hope that we don't see a lot of oak wilt. If this would have been 2 months ago, I think we would have been a lot more risk. So I think our risk level has dropped some. So I think there's some plus to that. So I would tell folks that if they don't need to prune it right now because it's not an emergency, I'd actually have them wait to have it fixed this winter. If they have to have it pruned right now because of an emergency, if they can use latex paint on the wounds they're creating, that's what I would have them do.
Okay. And if you do not need to go teeter on a ladder to try to paint latex paint on a broken branch.
I actually think it's too late. I think those wounds are dried enough now that they're not going to be as susceptible. And if something happened, it probably already happened. So do not go out there and try to, we could always train a drone to do that, Charity.
Okay, maybe by the next time something like this happens. All right, Richard Gerard and Mark Vitosh are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Our email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Bobby is here or on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Bobby.
Hi,
what's your question?
I have a white pine tree that the trunk divides into two trees, and one side broke off, half of it broke off with the storm. Should we cut the whole thing down, both sides, or would one side still live?
One side might live, Bobby, and that's one thing you'd want to have the tree service or an arborist evaluate. If 50% of the trees left, between the two, that tree, or if it's a main trunk, the big concern is going to be is how those trunks are connected lower down. If there's still a weak connection of where those two kind of come together, that may justify that you have to take it down. But if the tree alone is stable with what's left, there may be some possibility that you can just cut the stub off and leave the rest. The other concern, though, that you have, if this is close to a house and stuff like that, a lot of times when you take one stem away, when you have multiple stems, that exposes that other portion more. So that's where looking at the remaining part to see what its structure is like will need to be done to kind of determine if it could stay or not.
Okay. We had a tree, someone that's going to cut the trees look at it.
Uh-huh.
And he thought it would be okay, but we weren't, it's very tall, and we weren't sure. It broke off above where the trunk is joined for both sides.
Right. But my point, Bobby, is even though it broke off there, I would still maybe have them take a closer look where they're joined, because if a lot of times we get what we call V connections, and if you take your thumb and move it towards your hand, you create a seam. If you're looking at your thumb the way it connects to your hand, you create a seam. If there's a seam like that between where those trunks are, that's an awful weak connection. And even though the weight of the other one is off, if that's a weak connection, it could still split from what's remaining. But if it's more of what I would call a U connection between the two trunks, where you can actually see a U shape between the two main trunks, that's usually wood to wood, so that's stronger. So you can look at those connections to kind of tell, too.
Okay. Who can you get to come look if we wanted someone that an arborist or something in Iowa?
If you're in the Iowa City area, do you have access to the web?
I'm sorry, let's see.
Do you have access to the web?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you have access to the web, go to our Iowa DNR site and get my email, email me. And I will give you a list for the Iowa City Cedar Rapids area.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Thanks a lot for your call, Bobby, and please take care. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. I'll try to read a quick email question here from Maury and Marion. Storm took crowns out of my large white pines. The trees are about 50 feet tall and lost 10 to 15 foot tops. Will the crowns grow back, or do I need to take the trees down?
The crowns generally won't come back. I mean, you may get some side branches that'll come up, but there'll always be, you know, so if they lost, again, more than 50%, the other thing you worry about with that, Charity, is if it's just a stub on top, even if you clean that up, that eventually is going to be an entry area for decay. And so pine trees are pretty tough. If you lose more than half of them, I mean, the thing is, if it's in a location where there's no concern about safety, they can, you know, clean them up and give them some time, but they're probably not going to regain that form. Again, a few branches may come up and may kind of bush up, but it's probably not going to ever regain that form that it had originally.
All right, but if it's in a safe place, you can maintain a wait and see approach.
Yeah,
and you're going to have a different tree, but there may be green.
50% left, you can give it some time.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And you are welcome to join us with your questions. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about trees, but you're welcome to join us with your questions about other plants in your life as well. Richard Giron is here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. And again, I've shared a number of the resources that Mark has shared with us today on Twitter, so you can look on Twitter for those. We'll also put those in our web post later today, so when you finally do have internet access, you can refer to these resources and hopefully answer many of the questions that you have. This is a question from Suzanne, and this harkens back to what we were just talking about before the break, Mark. She says, so many of us in Cedar Rapids have splintered, topped, broken, but still standing parts of trees. Can they be saved? And what can we do? So that goes back to your 50% rule, right?
Well, and 50% is just kind of a general. I mean, obviously, if you lose more than that, and a lot of it is going to depend once you do the pruning. I always tell people, you look at that and say, okay, what do I have to prune and what will be left? And if, you know, again, if you had a tree way back from the house and stuff and it was less than 50%, but it meant a lot to you and you wanted to do the wait and watch, you can do that. And even in your yard, you could do that, you know, if you're right at 50 or just below, but you can prune it up and you're okay with what's left. You can wait as long as you get the pore structure stuff out and you get it cleaned up and what's left is stable. You can wait and see. But the thing is, if we have these trees that, as we talked about, Richard talked about, I talked about, where all you see is wood, those trees are going to sprout. Trees have what they call epicormic shoots that will respond to damage. And it's just like when we talk about don't top a tree. This basically, nature topped these trees. So what's going to happen is they're going to respond, and some may still respond this summer a little bit, but next spring they'll come out, and some of these may look very bushy. And people look at it and go, well, I've got something back. I can, you know, I can deal with that. But those come from the side. They're weakly connected. And as those branches get bigger, they can just shred right off in the next windstorm. So usually what you have left structurally, even if they sprout, is going to be very poor and it's going to be very difficult to have a quality tree.
All right. So we need to think long term.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, let's get to the phones. Patty's on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Patty.
Hi. When the storm brought down the crabapple tree, it was a matter of time. It was filled with black ants, and there was nothing holding that tree up. And 5 years ago, my neighbor's tree, 20 feet across the driveway from that tree, was taken down. He took it down. I don't know why, but I'm worried about the other crab apple tree in my yard that's 10 feet away. Are those black apps going to run over to there and kill that tree as well?
Well, I'll tell you, Patty, that usually those black ants, often, depending on size, can be carpenter ants. And carpenter ants don't eat trees, but they do nest in dead and decaying wood. So if there's dead and decaying wood in the remaining crabapple, they, you know, carpenter ants could come to those trees. The one thing you can do is look for decay. You can look for little holes. If you have old branch stubs, a lot of times look for sawdust or look for ants coming out. And if you see that in a tree like that, you can treat those carpenter ants. If you go to your different stores and get different treatments, there are insecticides that can be used that they'll carry that back to the nest, and you can take care of those carpenter ants. The thing to understand is the carpenter ants won't kill a tree, though. They're just an indicator that there's already decay there. So what you want to look for is decay in that tree. And if you find some, then you want to monitor for the prevalence or the appearance of ants. And then you can kind of handle it there. But if you also see decay, the good thing about crab apples, they tend to be smaller. There are some bigger ones, but their potential damage to their surroundings tends to be less because of their size. But if you find decay, you're going to want to look closer to see if that tree could have some problems of failure later.
Okay. Patty, thank you so much for your call. James is up next in Windsor Heights. Hi, James.
Hi, Cherry. Thanks very much.
Yeah,
The question I have today is about an oak tree, a mature oak that was completely destroyed in Monday's storm. You know, I'd always planned to get acorns from this and try to grow seedlings for my own property. But I was able to get some relatively new growth cuttings. And unfortunately, the only information that I could find about propagating oaks from cuttings was about live oaks. And so I used that information, some rooting powder, some potting mix, and some small seedling pots. And, you know, I have them set on my front porch, so they get some morning sun, but they're shaded through most of the day, keeping the medium that they're planted in. I'm keeping that moist. What are some other things that I need to be doing in order to assure success? Because I really do want to keep this tree alive, so to speak.
I would let Richard handle that, Charity.
All right, Richard. You get to answer your question.
It is extremely difficult to propagate those from cuttings. They just don't root very readily. You can try. One thing, I would get them out of the sun. Okay. They need light, but they don't need direct sun. And what I would basically do is try to kind of construct a greenhouse-type structure. Because the problem is that you have these cuttings, they have foliage, they have no roots, and they're going to keep on losing moisture. And typically what happens is they lose moisture, they can't replace it, and so they basically dry out and die. So if you could take, for example, some plastic, some stakes, and let's say you have two or three in a pot, a large pot, you could put in the stakes just inside the actual rim of the pot, and then take a big plastic bag and place it over the stakes and the cuttings, and then maybe tape that to the actual pot, and then put it in bright light, but not direct sunlight. And that way you have a closed environment so that the air inside gets full of moisture, and therefore the actual foliage does no longer lose moisture. And so it has a chance to root before it actually dries out and dies. But I will say, oaks are extremely difficult to propagate from cuttings. They're typically produced by either seed or grafting, because cuttings are very, very difficult. So I wouldn't be terribly disappointed if they didn't make it, because the odds aren't very good, actually. But you might want to go around looking for acorns.
Right. There may be some left, right?
Or maybe it's some seedlings, maybe in a flower bed or something that is from that tree.
All right, James, sorry about that. Thanks so much for your call. Raul is next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Raul.
Hi, Charity. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's your question?
I just had a quick question about, like, a lot of people have been going out and, like, taking all these trees and burning them. Is there, like, a certain amount of, like, permits that we need to do that at, like, personal property or at, like, a park?
Mark?
So if they live in Linn County, they need to call the public health department because generally you need a permit in Linn County to burn, period. So they need to call the Linn County Health Department to, if they're going to do any burning of debris or anything like that, they need to have a permit from them.
All right. And the last thing that people who without power and maybe even without water, et cetera, need is poor air quality on top of that.
Right. Right.
And Mark, do you think that if I put all of my logs that we've cut up out next to the road with a sign that says free firewood, do you think that this will go? Do you think that there'll be enough demand for all of these trees?
Well, I don't know. I think most people are going to have enough that. But you never know. I know there's actually a lot of need for firewood for a lot of different reasons. So that's always a possibility. But most people are probably going to have enough through their family and friends.
Right, right.
But you never know.
And a lot of the wood that came down, of course, is green wood. So if you are going to use this for firewood, you may need to stack it and wait a while, right?
You're probably better to stack it and actually wait 6 months to a year. Even if you can split it, that's even better.
All right.
The other thing I would tell people with all this green wood is they shouldn't stack it near their house and stuff, because just as a forewarning, and there's actually a little bulletin through Iowa State Entomology or somebody there that there's a lot of secondary wood borers that will come to this green wood. So if they pile it up next to their house, they're going to see a lot of sawdust probably in the next couple weeks.
Oh.
And they'll see piles of sawdust because there's a lot of what they call post beetles, bark beetles, all kinds of critters that'll come to that. And some of the post beetles actually, they want dead wood, but they like to start with the green tight bark, so that will attract them. So putting it right up next to the house, next to the garage, probably isn't a good idea. If they're going to dry firewood out in the backyard, out next to the fence, places like that where they can see the dust and stuff and not worry about it, so they're not attracting stuff that they don't want to attract.
All right. This is a question from Cindy near Ames. Could you please talk briefly about the value of leaving dead trunks and snags standing where that can be safely done? The populations of red-headed woodpecker and flicker populations are steeply declining, and they and many other kinds of wildlife badly need standing dead trunks and snags, even in towns and cities. Someone told me that in Linn County, they saw an eagle just circling and circling and not finding any place to land. Is there something to that, Mark, that people should, if they can, in an area, leave a dead tree?
100%. I mean, again, you're going to have to work with your neighbors, and sometimes in town that's tougher just because aesthetics and stuff like that, which we've talked about all kinds of stuff related to that. But dead trees are great for wildlife, for woodpeckers, and actually trees that are dead that have loose bark. We have a number of bat species in Iowa that utilize that shedding bark or those kind of edges for summer roost. So in our woodland management and stuff, we always talk about trying to leave snag trees so many per acre throughout. And in our house or in our yards, in our neighborhoods where we can leave, in some cases from a safety case or just, you know, out of sight, out of mind, sometimes maybe having that tree service cut it to even 7 or 8 feet and leaving that dead stub is going to be a great place for woodpeckers and stuff like that. So even if we can't leave it 14 feet tall, but we can bring it down to a safer size, even leaving those stubs, I walk in woods all the time and see 6-foot stubs that have the woodpecker holes in them all over them. And so they're utilizing that. They're going after insects in there. So to Cindy's point, if you can do it safely, That is. And just on another note, from wildlife in general, we're talking about the destruction, but from a wildlife aspect and even in our woodlands and stuff, these new openings can be positive to wildlife habitat. They create new shrub conditions, new successional conditions where new trees come, which there are certain species that need that kind of habitat. In northeast Iowa, we actually do some harvesting to actually get new successional stands where we have young stands coming because we want that young habitat. So there are some definite positives to this, and this is what happens in nature. So there are some definite benefits to what's happening. It's just the destruction and stuff kind of overwhelms us. But to Cindy's point, keeping some of those dead trees, if you can do it safely, can be very beneficial.
We have this question from Marge in Ames. I lost my large ash on Monday, which fell on my small redbud. I need a relatively fast-growing replacement to shade my three-season room. I like the red point maple, but is there something better? And what about a flowering crab to replace the redbud?
I like the flowering crab to replace the redbud. She, again, depending on how much size that she can for a shade tree. Again, our concern about maple, as we just said, is, I have a lot of concern that we've overplanted maple already. I think a good alternative shade tree, if she can handle a bigger tree, I think red oak makes a good shade tree. Another one is, depending on what location she's at in the state, tulip poplar can be a pretty good size shade tree. So there are some other alternatives. We've even talked about American elm in the past, that we're bringing back some of the American elms. So if it's a larger shade tree she can stand, I think there are some other options out there.
Now, Mark, you mentioned planting this coming spring. There are still trees in nursery centers right now. Usually we see some sales in the fall. That may not be the case this year because demand might be a little bit higher. But if people want to get started on tree replacements right now, is this an okay time to plant?
I'd wait a couple more weeks till it cools off, but September and early October for shade trees is a good time to plant. I mean, fall is not a bad time to plant trees, especially the deciduous trees. If we're talking conifers, I tend to want to plant the conifers in the spring, but if we are going to even plant some potted conifers, if you can get those planted in late August, early September, I think the option is still there. But yeah, I mean, we talked about the spring, but if people have an opportunity, fall is not a bad time. It's just, a lot of times it may take more time to kind of evaluate the site to make sure you're selecting the right trees for your situation. So I'm telling them, you don't have to be in a rush, but if you have things cleaned up and you have some space and there are some sources out there, fall trees, especially the potted or the ball and burlap, are an option. Yes,
all right,
ma'am.
And it may feel like you're really doing something at this point that could
right.
be as therapeutic as it is good for our landscape. Mark Vitosh, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. Richard Giron, thank you for being here. We'll talk more about some other plants next week.
Okay.
All right. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And of course, we have been focusing on trees this hour because of the incredible damage done to so many trees all across the state of Iowa on Monday due to our terrible storm. You can find the resources that Mark Vitosh was talking about on my Twitter feed at Charity Nebby right now. We'll also share those resources on our web post at iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. Take care.